Welcome to the MTA Podcast Series, a weekly audio cast featuring interviews with recognized industry professionals. And your host, Ed Carlson.
If you say that you are unlucky playing the stock market, it may not be luck at all. You are simply playing by the wrong rules. At the Channel Capital Research Institute, we believe the best way to grow rich is to research the investment strategies of the wealthy over long periods of time. In doing so, we discovered that the mega-rich protect their prosperity at all costs. Today is Tuesday, June 8th, 2010, and today's guest is Doug Roberts. Doug Roberts serves as managing principal for the Channel Capital Research Institute. He is a contributor to AOL's Money and Finance section and is frequently called upon by CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, MarketWatch.com, TheStreet.com, Reuters, Barron's, and other media as an expert on the Federal Reserve Bank. From 1994 to 1998, Mr. Roberts was a managing director of the Roberts-Mitanni Group, a New York merchant bank specializing in the investment of capital from Japan and East Asia. Mr. Roberts began his career as an associate of the Morgan Stanley Group, working in the corporate finance department in both the New York and London offices from 1983 to 1985. He earned a BS and an MBA from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania in 1983. Doug Roberts, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me here, Ed.
You bet. It's a beautiful day here in the Pacific Northwest. How's life in Shrewsbury, New Jersey, is it?
Not too bad here in the Northeast. It's about the same. Good 90 degrees outside and sunny. You can't ask for a better day.
Oh, man, 90 degrees. I haven't seen that for over a year. Playing by the wrong rules. Do rules exist in the market nowadays? For that matter, have they ever?
I think what you found is you found certain strategies that tend to work over time. In the short term, a lot of times things don't work, but over time there are a variety of strategies, both technical, fundamental, quantitative, that have worked. The real question is, do you have the patience to stick with it? Because not all strategies work all the time.
Right.
And the real problem is people allow their emotions to kind of control them, and you end up and naturally condition us to do exactly the wrong thing at exactly the wrong time.
Boy, you are talking my language, brother. Over time, there are a variety of strategies that work. And yet, a famous man once said, in the long run, we're all dead. How do we balance those two facts?
Well, there are a variety of things. In other words, really, what's your risk appetite? Normally, you know, I mean, I guess probably athletes sometimes say no pain, no gain. Oftentimes, you have to be more structured to deal with volatility. If you want basically better returns, you have to be willing to put more work in and basically have a stronger stomach. So what happens is you may find that oftentimes things, you know, in the long run, we're all dead. But at the same time, it depends really upon what your risk appetite is. If you want something, you're willing to basically do a little bit more. But what you find sometimes as well, Ed, is sometimes it's not even basically, negative performance. It's underperformance that can upset people. And again, that's knowing yourself and knowing what you're comfortable with. Some people like to trade more actively. They have to be constantly having activity. Other people don't really like to do too much of anything. You really have to choose a strategy which suits your particular personality.
Well, and this may be a great segue into your multiple investment strategies. You've got a number of investment strategies, and there's one in particular I want to spend some time with today. But when I read through the research you sent me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I didn't see anything about judging an individual's investor risk profile. Excuse me. I didn't see a way to come up with a specific risk profile. Did I miss something, or do you have a specific way to determine which of these strategies is appropriate?
Well, actually, in the member guide, for basically my research, what I do is I talk to people. Number one, you got to get it. You know, can you stand downturns? If you can't stand downturns, then maybe what you want a strategy is that basically tries to shift out of the market when there are downturns. Otherwise, what you may need is, let's say, if you don't want to do that, you're not into really actively trading the market. What you may want to do at that point is be into less risky assets. You may get less of a return, but it kind of balances out your entire situation. It really depends. These are the questions you have to ask yourself. We kind of go through it really in the member guide, give you a list of questions that kind of you need to think about yourself. Oftentimes, your account can be very useful. If you're in a situation where you have really, you know, very little funds and you're approaching retirement, you may not want to be in a strategy that basically bets everything 100%. Because at that point, even if you're 100% correct, there are going to be drawdowns in any strategy. And at that point, if you have too much emotional pressure on you, you're going to basically panic at the worst possible time. So you really need to almost do a gut check. You can help it, but you really have to start asking a couple of these questions yourself. Now, what I do with my strategies is I kind of address different issues. You know, we have some strategies for people who don't like to trade. They really don't want to have that much to do with it. They're kind of like a buy-and-hold investor. But at this time, what I'm offering them is maybe things where they change their investments infrequently. It's not going to give you the type of returns that possibly a more active strategy will get. But then again, if you're not comfortable with doing that, you're going to have a problem, in kind of executing it. But this is something which may be superior to, let's say, a straight buy and hold. Uh-huh. Other times, for the more active investor, we look for something there, and then it gets into the other question, do you want to be active with a variety of different asset classes and try to offer diversification? It really depends upon how much you want to do into it, how much you're comfortable with, and how many assets that you have to deal with. If you have a large asset base, you might want to take a more diversified strategy, a more sophisticated strategy, and it might be worth your time to learn. That was actually what happened with us, is I had initially had a family business, and what kind of gave me my grubstake, aside from my background in Wall Street, was the fact that at some point I had cash to invest, and I had to really I figured out pretty quickly, just using the laws of compounding, which Einstein said was one of the great wonders of the universe, that if I can compound my money sufficiently, I just have to stay around long enough and have enough patience and not make too many mistakes, and you could acquire wealth that way. So that was really what led me to this, but my idea was to really give you a menu so that you can pick and choose for basically what's best to you. I give you a series of questions, but then ultimately, since we're not an investment advisor, you really have to then use those questions or use basically your own resources to figure out what's best for you.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about some of those strategies. Three that I picked out that I thought were of interest, or at least to me, you've got the hedge fund toolbox, you've got your twin foundations equity strategies, and then you've got this follow the Fed strategy. I think our listeners would be interested in hearing about that. You characterize it as a strategy for the buy and hold investor who wants to be fully invested with minimal trading activity. It almost seems, I'm going to give you a chance to explain what strategy is, but just as an opening salvo here, it almost seems like it's an oxymoron that someone's that doesn't want to be bothered with trading activity or following the markets would be following the Fed. Maybe you can answer that question as you explain the strategy to us.
Well, there are long-term trends with the Fed and short-term trends. If you look at kind of whether the Fed is raising or lowering interest rates or basically follow every statement, what you may find is a lot of that is noise. It's not basically something that's going to be really affecting your portfolio significantly in the long term, but basically something that can be useful for the trader, but not really as much for the longer-term investor. What we found is actually the interesting thing that got us on it, and that this is kind of detailed in my book, Follow the Fed to Investment Success, which is published by John Wiley, is we found one of the, that most people, because of trading costs, the emotional roller coaster, that I talked about, the ability to not really follow their strategy, don't really even beat the S&P 500. People who are sophisticated and disciplined can do that. But some people are just saying, I don't really have the emotional fortitude to continue to do that. I've got other things. Maybe they're a doctor or a lawyer, and they really don't have the time to follow it. I'm not saying that it can't be done. What I'm just saying is you have to really be focused on doing it. And for those type of people, what they've generally done is basically put it in a, you know, a split between fixed income and bonds. And that, you know, gives you a certain amount of return. The interesting thing is over the last 20 years, what we found is actually treasury bonds have actually beat the S&P 500. Pretty amazing, isn't it? But what we've also found is really the one thing that consistently beats the S&P 500 over an extended period of time, let's say a 10-year period, is small cap stocks. And the interesting thing was, is before everybody goes out there and invest in small cap stocks, what we find is small caps have a problem. Their outperformance is heavily concentrated into short periods of time, which actually, you know, don't occur that frequently. For instance, you had an entire period of the 80s and 90s where small caps underperformed, and just as everybody was predicting the death of small caps in 2000, small caps rallied, and over the last decade, even with the downturns in the market, have outperformed the S&P 500 significantly. Mm-hmm. What we found was that was linked to something very, very simple, basically real interest rates. To put it simply, do short-term interest rates exceed or, you know, lag the rate of inflation? If they're less than the rate of inflation, that means you have negative real interest rates, and we found that small cap outperformance and we went back actually 80 years and found that was almost totally correlated to those periods. And that if you weren't in during those periods, what you found is actually small caps underperformed. And it makes a lot of sense because really when you have negative real interest rates, that means the Fed is putting its pedal to the metal and trying to pump as much money into the economy as you could. But it occurs for long periods of time. Sometimes you don't even have to make a trade or change in your portfolio. Let's say if you're alternating between a small cap stock and a large cap stock, you know, every 2 to 3 years. And you can achieve, let's say, over an extended period of time, outperforming the S&P with substantially lower volatility on the order of, let's say, 2 to 3%, which is pretty significant. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing since the book came out is we found a similar pattern exists with gold and basically treasury bonds, that really gold's outperformance comes in a negative real interest rate environment, and it has a simple situation. So if you kind of create a balanced portfolio, let's say with 50% stocks alternating between small or large, and then 50% treasury bond gold alternating between treasury bonds and gold, over, let's say, the last 40 years, you've been able to outperform the S&P 500 by almost 4%, or, you know, in absolute term, I mean, in relative terms, that's 50%, almost 50% higher than, you know, that period of time. Now, what we also found is if you add, and this was another thing that we've discovered, is that, you know, a lot of people go to cash, but what we find is if you go to short to intermediate term treasury bonds, you know, anywhere from, let's say, 3 to 5 years, you can increase your performance without a significant increase in volatility. As a matter of fact, everybody talks about during the inflationary 70s that, you know, short-term treasury bonds were, you know, getting killed by inflation. That was true with long-term bonds, but with five-year bonds, it actually outperformed the S&P 500 during the inflation. So if you mix that into it, what actually Randy Forsythe, the Barron's, calls a triple play, let's say one-third stocks, one-third gold, long-term treasuries, and one-third, let's say, intermediate-term treasuries of 5 years, you can outperform. And we've tested this back. The research is done actually in our subscription service. Some of it's also detailed in my book. We find that we can actually outperform the S&P by a significant amount, let's say 2%. But here's the kicker. You have the volatility of basically having a bond portfolio. Now, can you do more by active trading, by using some of the technical indicators and some of the quantitative indicators that we've talked about? Absolutely. And I'm not saying that can't be done, but it's going to require more work, more fortitude. But this is a substantial improvement without a lot more work for, let's say, the average buy and hold investor.
I get it. We're going to continue with Doug Roberts in a moment, but first a reminder that on June 22nd, we'll have from Execution Noble, former Morgan Stanley technical analyst, Rick Bensinger. Doug, you wrote, "We believe the best way to grow rich is to research the investment strategies of the wealthy." Well, to quote F. Scott Fitzgerald, the rich are different from you and me. And by that I mean, aren't the rich looking to protect what they have as opposed to what the great masses of people want, which is to grow their money?
Well, they want to protect, but what they've done is they actually, what I mean by there is they've actually have the focus to really basically research things. And a lot of times what you find is they also have a proven strategy of, you know, with some of them, not all of them, that they've worked. For instance, if you look at it, let's say in the technical area, some of the great traders and robber barons of the 1900s were using technical strategies, and some of the research came from there. What we also found is actually a large part of the time, you know, let's say during the 1930s, somebody like Joe Kennedy, who made a substantial amount of money, you can actually glean a certain amount of focus or benefits from watching him. Even Ben Graham, and again, I'm looking at it from a variety of points of view, what he did was he not only, you know, basically did a tremendous amount of research, he also put into practice a lot of what he did. And he was one of the first quantitative analysts. Actually, how he came up with some of his fundamental strategies was he actually researched stock data at that point and then basically back-tested this before even doing it. So by kind of looking at these people, again, do they have the total answer? No. But what you can do is you can find out a pretty good idea of what's worked in practice and what hasn't worked as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I believe you wrote, "Following your investment strategy after its selection is crucial to your investment success. Unless your conditions change, you should stick with your strategy." You know, we often hear that from asset allocators, and I've often wondered about that statement. I mean, why would anybody want to hold their investments if they believe the market was going south?
Okay, well, again, we've got to differentiate here between strategies and investments. For instance, if we take something as simple as, let's say, following a move-it average, that's a strategy, and that's a technical strategy. But what we found is that there are periods of time where that may not work. But at that point, what you really want to do is, you accept that as part of, going into business. So I think we have to differentiate between a strategy versus a particular investment. A strategy is a set of rules, a discipline, whatever it may be, that's been tested over a sufficiently long period of time, hopefully also in practice as well, to gain the idea that it's probably going to work. But then you have to be prepared to stick with that strategy, you know, through basically hard times. Now, what you may also want to do, and what I think I've talked about, is I don't think you should really focus your portfolio on one single strategy. Because there are periods of time where, let's say, it could be a year, it could be 2 years, it could be 3 years, where that strategy is not working. And then what you may want to do, or it's underperforming, is basically have another strategy which hopefully, you know, doesn't work when the other one is working to give you a smoother ride. But you have to understand that. But that is very, very different from, let's say, holding your investment. This isn't really a buy and hold strategy that I'm advocating, although that can be one strategy that we're talking about. But what I'm saying is this is really the idea that you have a set of rules that you've determined are appropriate for you, and it may be several strategies that you try to balance out. And what you attempt to do is stick with those, or at least do it where it's not ruled by emotion, but ruled by basically discipline and logic mm-hmm. to basically set up your portfolio.
Doug, we're just about out of time here. I'm sorry we haven't had time to get into any depth on your other strategies, because certainly the ones I mentioned I thought were real interesting. I'd like to conclude, however, with a comment you made about your Twin Foundations equity strategy. You wrote, "Based upon my analysis of the past record, I have found that the market trend indicator in general adds to performance during a secular bear market and penalizes performance during a secular bear market." You know, I really appreciated your honesty when I read that, but this is pretty much a lot of people's feelings about asset allocation strategies in general. I mean, in a bear market, don't all correlations go to one anyway? And in which case, if that's the case, what's the benefit of asset allocation?
Well, what you're finding, actually, what I was saying is actually the market trend indicator can do very well for you in a bear market and actually penalize you during a bull market.
Right.
Is what you're finding is that there's volatility in basically, you know, a bull market, but, you know, the general trend is up. In a bear market where the general trend is down, you want to basically capture the upticks and then basically be somewhere else for the downticks. But with regard to asset allocation, what I'm finding is that there are still benefits. And, for instance, what you may find is, for instance, asset allocation, particularly, let's say, if you're in risk-free assets, then what happens is they can do quite well during a bear market, and they are actually a very good diversifier. If you go back really the last downturn that we had in 2008-2007, basically risk-free assets of a longer-term nature did quite well for, you know, the investor and actually rallied. And that was not a unique pattern. That also did quite well during the 1930s as well. So that's a case where it really depends upon the type of assets and really where you need to have active asset allocation to be in the right assets at the right time for the right time frame for you to benefit. But, you know, being in different asset classes, they perform differently.
Active asset allocation, yeah.
Yeah, what you're really saying is basically that's true with risky assets, but that may mean that what you really want to do is have a substantial concentration of non-risky assets in your portfolio. And at the same time, if you're an active asset allocator, possibly, you know, based on prevailing conditions, based upon the discipline of your model and strategies, be shifting more into, you know, those non-risky asset classes, which will likely benefit from a bear market, you know, when conditions prevail.
Mm-hmm. Doug,
you can actually learn a fair amount of more about this. I have some stuff actually at my website, channelcapitalresearch.com, which talks about this as well.
It's been great having you with us today. Any parting shots before we conclude?
No, it's just at this point, what you have to remember is there is no the answer. There is no magic rule. What you hope to do is have a toolkit, and that's how I got the name the Hedge Fund Toolbox, that you can use to basically help you allocate your portfolio. And that's really what we're talking about when we come up with these strategies, is we're saying, you know, we're not happy with just, let's say, a straight asset allocation into one category or two categories, and we want tools to help us to allocate among different areas so that we're in the best place at the best time for the for the prevailing conditions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, well said, well said. Well, that wraps up another version of the MTA podcast series. From SeattleTechnicalAdvisors.com, I'm Ed Carlson with Shane Squark, who with the DOS version 3.0 dancers is somewhere in a recording studio deep in the bowels of the MTA's World Domination Headquarters in New York City. Say goodbye, Shane.
So long, everybody.
Let's keep our stops tight. Good day.